Okay, so last week, we had a chance to dig into the whole question of right and left, which was Resh Pei Tes Sif Gimel, and that wrapped up our discussion about where you put the mezuzah. We spoke two shiurim ago about how high and how deep, and we spoke last time about which side and how you figure out which way is right, which way is left. And remember, we spoke last time about ultimately about a list of five rules. Who remembers, right? A list of a hierarchy of five different rules to determine which is right and which is left when you in trying to figure out the right side for the Doreh. So rule number one, the very top of the pile was Rosh Hashanah, right? From the outside in.
We'll just get this up on the board.
Right, rule number one was
Shus Harabim Labayis,
and that's rule number one, because after all, the din is you have a mezuzah going into your bias. So if one side is not a bias, the other side is, so obviously going into the bias is from the outside in. Rule number two was
dead end.
Ah, fantastic. The dead end room. Again, unless you're a Lubavitcher, like a Ralph Metzger, rule number two is dead end room, which is kol, the post referred to as kol hakinisa. All the entry, all the initial, obviously you go in, you later on, you know, walk the other way. But the initial entry through this doorway, this initial passage through the doorway is always going from the outer room into the dead end room. And three and four, that we said was machlok zaposkim, which is which, but one of three and four is rov hakinisa, and the other one was ikar tashmish. You remember the Shach spoke about Iker Tashmish. Rov HaKnisa means it's not dead end room. You don't always go through that way first. But nine times out of ten, when you come into the house, you end up in the kitchen first, and then you go into the dining room. And it's only one out of ten times you would come into the house and first go into the dining room, then into the kitchen. Right? That's, I think, usually the way it is in a lot of houses, because the kitchen has a lot of natural incentives to end up in the kitchen, both social and culinary. There are usually fewer natural offenses end up in the dining room first, like homework. So, usually, the door between the dining room and the kitchen, you'll end up first in the kitchen and then going to the dining room. So that means Rov HaKnisa points from the kitchen to the dining room. You have them on the right side going that way. The Chovos HaDar quotes the Machlokas, whether that's number three or the number three is Iker Tashmish. We saw Iker Tashmish in the Shach. Shach had quoted from the Lubush, pointed out that, and ultimately goes back to the Mordechai, and the Daik in Rashi. Beam Daik in the Gemara, really. Right? We read in Shofar's read the Daik in Rashi, that when the Gemara talks about Hekrit Seer, it's only talking about where neither one is a dead end room. And the Shach points quotes from Lubush from Mordechai, it's also talking about a situation where the only time you use Hekrit Seer, which is number five, they look at which way the door actually swings. It's only when both rooms are heavily used. One is the Bei Gavre and one is the Bei Nashi. And Rashi had taken pains to explain that both those rooms being things that get used on a regular basis. Bei Nashi is used for hours every day, and the Bei Gavre is used for hours every day. But you have a situation where there's a real stark difference in the usage of the two rooms, like the kitchen, which you use every day for hours every day, and the dining room, which is only used for a couple hours a week on Shabbos, in a situation where you don't use the dining room during the week. So then, Iker Tashmish points towards which? Towards the main room. Going in should be primarily going into the main room, which is, in this case, the kitchen. Remember that the Shach had given us a little chance to appreciate what we have. Because his example of Iker Tashmish was not that you enjoy the kitchen more than the dining room, but that during the wintertime, right, only one room of your house is heated. So during the wintertime, the whole family packs into the Beis HaChorif near the oven, and everyone, mom and dad and all the kids, sleep in the Beis HaChorif and eat in the Beis HaChorif. And I don't know if they were doing homework, but whatever was going on in the house was going on in... Your house converted to a studio, to borrow Ben Sion's example from last time. Your whole house in northeastern Poland, perhaps, for the months that it was freezing cold, the whole family just packed into that one room where the heater was. That's what Shach had said. Look, that room gets used, that studio, so to speak, gets used
12 months a year. The other rooms, which aren't heated, they get used 8 months, 7 months, 6 months a year. So Yekir Tashmish is going into the Beis HaKhorov. Again, our lives are, Baruch Hashem, far more convenient and in countless ways we don't even appreciate. So we get to use multiple, I won't ask for a show of hands, I imagine most of you have heated rooms throughout your house. Not, I would not put you on the spot. But we certainly enjoy more creature comforts than our great-great-great-grandparents did living in Lithuania, as the Shach did, or Poland, as Ramah did. And when the Polish trip comes back on Wednesday, we can ask them. I think they will have seen over the course, they probably are right now, observing living conditions. They're somewhere in between what the Shach described and what we experienced. So there's a lot to appreciate. But anyhow, coming back to Hilchos Mezuzah, so Iker Tashmish, Baruch Hashem, in our lifestyle, we also have Iker Tashmish. We have it in milder, kinder, friendlier ways. Like, again, the kitchen, which gets used several hours a day, as opposed to the dining room, which might get used several hours a week. The Iker Tashmish, and here's the irony. Very often, these two point in opposite directions. Because you'll notice I gave the same example, intentionally, for both. Right? You could walk from the living room either into the dining room first or into the kitchen first. So, Rov Knisa probably points from the kitchen to the dining room because you go into the kitchen first and then later on you end up going to the dining room. So your initial passage right through that doorway is from the kitchen to the dining room. But for the same reason, Iker Tashmish points into the kitchen. This is an important shiloh. When you put mezuzahs in your house in Ritz Hashem a couple of years from now, in your apartment, you'll ask your local competent Orthodox rabbi, which he recommends. The Chofetz Chaim quotes a machlokas between mechatanim, between Yitzchak Weiss, who was a dying of the Eilat Haredes, and Yaakov Breish, who was his mechatan, and a rabbi in, I believe, Switzerland, the author of the shul is called Kazakov. So they, apparently they came to their kids. Kind of the way this is, the machloks and halacha don't often play out this way, but they're mechatanim, which means they shared a set of children. Right? One son was married to the other one's daughter. So I forget which order they went, but apparently one came to the house and said, "Oh, the mezuzah should be there." And then, you know, the next yontif, whatever it was, the other one came visiting and said, "Oh, well, the mezuzah should be there." How do you a beautiful blend of halachic machlokas and family dynamics? I think everyone got along well. Just have to figure out whose psak they're going to follow. Then again, if you're not a Lubavitcher, at the bottom of the barrel, the very bottom of the list, comes Hecker's here. Everything else is basically the same. It's not a dead end room. Both rooms you get in from other ways, and it's hard to really nail down what's Rov HaKnisa. People walk this way, they walk that way. There isn't any clear preference in terms of initial traffic. And Iker Tashmish is only when there's a severe stock difference, like, you know, the Beis HaKhoref, or like a diamond which is only used on Shabbos. Now, you'll have rooms where it's neither here nor there. So then, when all else fails, you follow which way the door swings. A couple of final points on this, and we'll leave some of this discussion for Simon Reish Pevav. I think you had asked Ben Sien last time, what do you do when you don't have Hecker's Seer either? And how do you not have Hecker's Seer? All else fails, you go for last resort and Hecker's Seer. Yeah, what if your last resort also falls out? Either because there is no door, or because the door swings both ways. Like in oftentimes in a restaurant, the door between where the kitchen and where the customers sit and eat, the door swings both ways because you'll have some kitchens don't have that. Some kitchens they want waiters going in and waiters going out to not use the same door, so that way you don't have any unintentional crashes. So some kitchens, Dafka, have two separate doors near each other, each only swings one way. But a lot of kitchens have a door that swings both ways. If you have no door, or a double directional door, or you have one of those like hanging doors, like you have a curtain or you know, beads, something hanging, which to the extent that it swings any way you want it. So what do you do then? Then I think there are three approaches in Poskim, and you should ask if this comes up, and it may. You should ask your local Orthodox rabbi what he recommends. There are three approaches, and all three logical possibilities are staked out by different Poskim. One possibility is both, one possibility is either, one possibility is neither. And some say, you're chayiv and yamin, and they're both yamin, so you have to put up mezuzah both ways. Others say, chayvin yamin, there is no well-defined yamin, so the doorway needs a mezuzah. So whatever, you know, arbitrarily choose whichever one you want, either way is fine. And then some say, no, you need yamin. Yamin is ma'akev. It's not just the doorway needs a mezuzah. It has to be yamin. But some say you need yamin, they're both yamin. So put on both sides. Others say, you need yamin, and there is no well-defined yamin. So don't put on mezuzah at all. That's a question of how you understand, is yamin haknisa integrated into the core definition of the chiyuv? In which case, either there's be no mezuzah or there's be mezuzah on both sides, or no, the Pesach is chayv mezuzah. An added feature is that it's supposed to be yamin haknisa. If that's not available, then we'll ignore that and put it up wherever you please. So there are all three positions, both either or neither, are staked out by poskim. So if this comes up, that is certainly an important shaila to ask. I want to take a look now at the next piece of Gemara. Here we are in Daf. Lamed Gimel. Well, I see that somehow the packets, if I just gave you a packet this morning, it's missing Lamed Gimel days. Let me give them off, excuse me. How that happened, I'm not sure. So if you just took a packet today, you'll have to work from memory. If you have an older packet, I believe you do have it, that's right, that's the one with the pretty pictures on it. So we had left off over here, the top of Lam Gilman Lav, the Gemara discussed Hecker's here. Everybody goes, it's Hecker's here, the Bendigama Benashi, that's had launch Rashi the Marta into this analysis that unless you're a lobbyist, pushed Hector Tzir out of what looked like it should be a place of prominence into a place of almost insignificance. Then the Gemara goes on to tell a story. And you have to know that there are family dynamics in the story, which are not really relevant to the question, but Rav Nachman was one of the most prominent, most famous Amoraim of the second generation of Amoraim Babel. He was a second, third, depending on your count, but he's loosely speaking the generation after Rav and Shmuel. And he's a incredible Talmud Chacham, a man of overwhelming prominence in learning, specifically Choshen Mishpat. He is particularly famous for being a dayan for Nashon Zikin, but he is of great significance throughout Shas, throughout all topics. And here he is, the commentator is something that has nothing to do with Choshen Mishpat. He also happened to be very close, very, 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 very much a part of the family of the Reish Galusa. Who was the Reish Galusa? It's a title that will come across every year. So people watch us, though. What's it?
Exilarch.
The Exilarch, right. And what, pray tell, is the Exilarch?
Head of the people in exile.
Right, yes, indeed. He was well said. The Exilarch, for those who prefer the terminology, or the Reish Galusa, is the Rosh HaGalah. He was the head, as you said, the head of the Jews in Galus. He was the political leader of the Jewish community in Babel during the period of Amoran. I think it was probably, you have to ask the historians, but we know that the beginning of the Tkufas HaAmoraim, there was a revolution, there was a change in the political structure, what was going on in Babel, Iraq, Iran, at the time. And the Persian Empire switched over at that point to the Din Shmuel, who came a generation before Nachman, was incredibly close to the man whose face you can see in the Metropolitan Museum of Art here in New York City. Not his actual face, but as close as you can get. They have a silver, it's like a, may have silver, like a silver sheet. Someone, at the time, banged out the face, like a sculpture, but just the face, just a sheet, banged into the shape of the face of Shapur the First. Shapur, who's Shapur? So his name pops up a number of times in Shas. Shapur the First Shavur Malka. The Gemara has all these fascinating stories about Shavur Malka, especially at the end of Maseches Avodah Zarah. The Gemara tells the story elsewhere. He was very friendly with Shmuel, just like a generation earlier, Antoninus, the Roman emperor, was incredibly close with Yehuda Hanasi. So Shavur Malka was very close with Shmuel, and they were very, very friendly. And there's this wonderful story, not for now, the end of Avodah Zarah, where he gives a hard time. Shmuel shows up to palace with another Jew who wasn't so religious, and Shavur Malka basically gives to say he cuts fruit for the other fellow with a non-kosher knife, and then kashers a knife and cuts for Shmuel. And the guy says, oh, what about me? Am I chopped liver? He says, oh, I know what you were up to last night. Cool. Don't give me any... I know how firm you are, And he says, but I know Shmuel's a religious man. I know you're not a religious man. I know Shmuel's a religious man. So you're not some Akhman kashrus. I'll cut for the trade for that. So from Shavu Malkan on, there's a transcendent, there's much more openness and freedom for a number of generations that Jews enjoyed in Bava. And one of the expressions of that, I believe, is that the Jews actually seem to have some sort of like semi-autonomous, like within the empire, they had their own thing going. And they had their own semi-autonomous political structure, which included a Reish Galusa at the top. Reish Galusa was a Jew who was the political head of the Jewish community. It's clear from different references in Shas that there were sometimes there were in different generations, Reish Galusa was very different. There were times when Reish Galusa was a Torah figure, or at least a Torah-friendly figure, and there were times when Reish Galusa seemed to have been very disconnected from the Rabbanim and from Shemir Samitzis, and obviously played out differently in different generations. See, here the Reish Galusa actually asked Rav Nachman was very close with the Reish Galusa, I believe they were family, and Gemara here tells a story of a Shaila that the Reish Galusa asked Rav Nachman right after where we left off, last time on Gimel Nov, right after the din of the Heker Tzira, Tiskav and Trevati, and the Gavin Ashi. We are on the 10th line or so of Gimel Nov. Reish Galusa Ba Vesa. The Reish Galusa comes Reish Galusa, or maybe later on. At some point, he had put together a sizable amount of cash and decided to build himself a new house. He built himself a religious Jew, builds himself a new house, you gotta call the rabbi to ask the mezuzah shaylos. That's what you gotta do. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes not obvious. So he calls Rav Nachman, and he says to Rav Nachman, Kavali mezuzasa. Please put up the mezuzah for me. I want you, rabbi, and you'll come and you'll put up all my mezuzahs. So what does Rav Nachman say to him? Rav Nachman, it's lovely that you're so excited to do mitzvahs. It's lovely that you're the first possible moment you're already calling in the Rav, the rabbi, I need to put up my mezuzahs, but it's a little bit premature. So lead Dasha Bereisha. First hang the doors. First install the doors, and then we'll talk about mezuzah. No. Right. They haven't put the doors yet. It's beautiful. The first possible moment is already bringing the Rav to put mezuzahs. That's great, but it's a little too early. First, put up your doors, finish the house, and then we'll talk about mezuzah. Why? Thank you so much. So Rashi says, Tosfos says, how come? What's wrong with putting mezuzahs first? We'll put the doors later. The man wants to do a mitzvah. So why hold them back? A guy comes to you and says, I want to go to Mosikin. 6:52. He says, no, it's too early. Go to the 8:10 chakras instead. Well, I'm going to Mosikin. Beautiful. Hey, yeah, I'm going to go to Mosikin, but isn't that nice? You're using my deal mitzvahs. So why is Rav pushing him off? So Tosfos and Rashi agree that the reason why he's pushing him off is because Al Pi Halacha was too early. It wasn't just that. Mosikin is not too early to have chakras. But if you want to daven at 4 o'clock in the morning, that is too early. So that's the exact thing. It's beautiful that you got up so early. Learn now, say to go to mitzvah, whatever you want to do, whatever type of hachanis you want to do, chesidim for litvaks, whatever it is, and we'll daven when it's time. So the both Rashi and Tosfos agree that here too, we're not going to say it's too early, I'll be there for mezuzahs, but why? So based on context, what would you say? Right? Based on context, so Tosfos says, it must be. The Reish Galusa built a nice house. This wasn't a standard four-room house. There's a book in the library written by an archaeologist named Yitzhak Hirschfeld, where he works his way thoroughly through Palestinian architecture in the Roman period, which we would translate in our terminology into how houses were built in Eretz Yisrael, but Tekufas HaMishnah. Architecture in the Roman period. And he, Yitzhak Hirschfeld, seems to be conversing with Shmaias, and he throughout his, it's like a 180, 200 page book or so, he's consistently quoting Shmaias that either illuminate what he found, or the things that he found illuminate Mishnayos. Mishnayos in the Mishnayos, Mishnayos here and there, different things about the, where the Mishnayos make different references to the houses and how they were built. Is it? Take a look here. We unearthed this house at this site, and now you see XYZ the Mishnayos talking about. We'll come back soon to a comment that he has, something he did not pick up on in the Halachos Mezuzah, coming our way soon. But one of the things he tells you is that it was sort of a more of the standard setup of a four-room house. In a four-room house, these shilas didn't necessarily come up. It was pretty simple architecture. Tosfos says, yeah, but this is the Reish Galusa we're talking about. Reish Galusa is building a house. After the Reish Galusa, this is a nice house. It's going to be a little more elaborate. It'll be, his elaborate was probably what we're used to. It's going to be a six, seven, eight-room house with doors, a couple of doors to the outside and rooms feeding into each other. And you're going to have a Hekatzir Shaila. You're going to have a Beit Gavrin, Beit Nashi, and so on and so forth. So Rav Nachman says it's too early to pass in the Shaila because I haven't yet seen which way the doors swing. I will tell you, Bizman Hazeh, I sometimes say the same thing. I've never gotten called in to look at a house while I was still under construction, but I will get called in sometimes to look at a house right after people move in, sometimes even before people move in, which is really ideal because you want to put mezuzahs, we'll get to this, we had a, the day you move in, the day you start living there should be the day the mezuzahs go up. So you really want to ask your shilas in advance. You plan in advance, always a good thing to do in life. You plan in advance, you know that, you know, next Thursday mezuzahs are going up, so I need time to, I have to even know, I need to ask a shilas, I have to rub, do a mezuzah tour, not only to figure out where the mezuzahs go, but how many mezuzahs do I need? So I need to go to the sofa. I'm not going to the sofa on moving day to buy mezuzahs. I'm going to place an order in advance with the sofa. Then I'm going to call if I bought a house, and they have time until we move in. So you'll have a mezuzah, you'll call the rabbi for a mezuzah, walk through a week or two or three or four beforehand, and that way you're ready for moving day. But sometimes there's some shots that can't be answered right away. You can almost always figure out how many mezuzahs you need, but oftentimes there'll be a couple of mezuzahs have to go up a tape with scotch tape, and then to be reassessed after a couple of months. Along the lines of Rav Nachman said, not the Hekert Seer, the doors are already swinging. But in terms of Robot Knesset and Inkertash, Robot Knesset in particular, a lot of times it's hard to know before you move into a house, sort of like how the family is actually going to, like until you get into, like until you break it in, it's like breaking in a baseball mitt, like until you sort of break into the house and actually start to use it and people get into a pattern, into a groove, it's hard to often know which way Robot Knesset is going to be. Well, people really mostly walk through this way and then into that way, or go through that way, it's hard to know. And like over time, after a couple of months, you'll after half a year, they look like, oh yeah, I see how things are. Sometimes it can change even a couple of years later. My father-in-law told me that, I don't know how many of you have been in their apartment yet, which some of you will be in the future. Different happy events, hagigas and whatnot. But basically you come in here, and here's the hallway. We'll do this loosely. Here's the dining room. You make a right, and you go into the dining room. And next to the dining room, the next room is the kitchen. And there are other rooms down the hallway. The living room, the bedroom, so and so. But here, you can go in from the hallway to the dining room or into the kitchen. And then there's also a doorway between the kitchen and the dining room. So this mezuzah over here actually moved over the years. That doorway. Because there is, this is a kitchen with kitchen stuff and with a table. The EIK, the eat-in kitchen. Obviously the dining room has full dining room table. So he told me, when the family was small, we only had a few kids, they would fit around the small kitchen table. They only used the dining room on Shabbos. So Iker Tashmish pointed into the kitchen. So, and the first couple years in the apartment, the mezuzah was on the right side over there, the right side going into the kitchen. As the family grew, and they could no longer fit around the table in the kitchen, so they started using the dining room every day. So at that point, there was no Iker Tashmish, because both rooms were used every day. And Robot Knesset, the people still went to the kitchen a little more than the dining room. So at that point, Robot Knesset was pointing from the kitchen to the dining room, and now the mezuzah was moved from here to here, the right side going to the dining room. So it is the sort of thing, every couple of years, you may want to look around your house and figure out, like, have things changed, the family changed, have we evolved in terms of how we use the house? So that's that point to Tosus, that's what Rav Nachman is telling us. You have to realize that a lot of these things, either very blatantly, physically, you can't figure out Hekert Seer if you don't have doors yet, or more subtly, like patterns of traffic and usage, are going to evolve over the course of time. You have to know what the patterns are But if you move, if the hacker city, it's not going to put up mezuzahs at all until you have the doors up. If it's a question of determining what are the robe haknisa pattern is going to look like, then you use your best guess. But if you don't want to ruin the fresh paint on the walls, then instead of putting a mezuzah with nails, you could put it up with scotch tape. And then a couple of months from now, you'll figure out if you want to nail up where it is or move it to the other side of the room. And that is what the Shulchan Aruch tells us right over here. Shulchan Aruch tells us how to put it up. Ketzad Kovan, Siv Dalet. Siv Dalet, Ketzad Kova. How do you put up the mezuzah? Again, if I gave you a packet today, I apologize, the mezuzah packets came out backwards. They're stapled awkwardly. They go on page 220, no matter when you got these packets. Page 220, Shulchan Aruch says, Ketzad Kova, how do you put up the mezuzah? You masnerenu b'masnerim b'mezuzah pesach. You can nail it to the doorpost. Mezuzah HaPesach, again, is the actual architectural doorpost. You can nail it. Or, Yachbor Bachafira. Shulchan Aruch, another way to do it is you could drill, instead of attaching it here, you could actually drill a groove. Let's say you have a stone doorway, which, again, Yitzhak Hirschfeld then is Roman architecture and the Palestinian architecture, Roman period. So the houses are often built largely out of stone, or at least the houses that survived 2,000 years in the ground were the ones that were built out. They were plenty of stone houses. If you have a stone house, how are you going to put up a mezuzah? So one way to put a mezuzah in a stone house is to drill into the stone. You make a groove, and then you can stick the mezuzah into that groove. So that he could show hard quotes in the Gemara that works.
Isn't that a solution to the flush door problem?
That is an interesting solution to the flush door problem. It could be, except that it's still going to not be in front of the door. It'll be...
It's not behind the door.
That's true. It could sometimes be a solution. This is definitely a solution sometimes to the sliding door, a patio door. That's when the dust come up. When you have a patio door... So typically the patio door means you have two panes of glass. One is fixed and the other one slides. So you're going to need to put up mezuzahs. And the question is, which one? Now, patio doors can be built different ways. It could be this one slides or it could be this one slides. So sometimes if the one that slides is on the right side going in, so then you can usually put the mezuzah, there's a space.
Right.
But if the mezuzah is, if the sliding door is on the left...
What does that mean about, like, front to back?
Wait a minute.
Right and left. They could still one...
What I mean is, if it's on the wrong side, if the sliding door is on the left, then it's going to slide all the way into... Sometimes you have a problem that's going to smack the mezuzah, depending on how the doorway is constructed. But sometimes what you're going to want to do is, if it's not going to ruin the doorway, you can groove in further and start sticking the mezuzah in. Even though the mezuzah may be hidden, as you think about even if you're not adding an additional groove, the mezuzah isn't really visible because it's in the midst of, you're putting the mezuzah inside the frame of the sliding patio door. But the Shulchan Aruch says, turn on closing the door. Hi, welcome. Make yourself comfortable. So here's the Shulchan Aruch. Sif Dalet writes that, again, you could either attach a mezuzah on the surface, in a way that's visible, or you could groove into the doorway and actually put it inside. But here's one issue to keep in mind, parallel to what we saw earlier in the Siman, which is, v'lo yamik lachpar tefach ba'omen, shem asa kem sula. If you want to groove into the doorway, that's fine. There's a limit to how deeply you're going to dig in. The mezuzah still needs to be tof tefach la'pesach. Much as we saw the din of tefach elsewhere, you want the din of tefach asam l'chut. So here you have the din of tefach. You can't drill a hole half a foot into the doorway and stick it in. Again, why would you be grooving rather than attaching the outside? So either because, like as in Yitzhak Hirschfeld's example, You have a stone doorway, and one solution, we'll get to another solution in a moment. One solution is drill into the doorway. Another reason why you might be doing this is Jews under Soviet persecution or other situations of religious persecution throughout the millennia. So this is one way of hiding your mezuzah. There were Jews who had a mezuzah that was absolutely invisible to the outside. They had one night, under cover of darkness, drilled a hole into the doorway and slipped the mezuzah in, and they plugged it up. And no one knew about the mezuzah, but they knew that they were Mekayim Mitzvah Hashem. So that's this Gemara. This is one Lama Gimel, recorded in Reish Pei Tested Dalad. You have the right to brew in. I should tell you that if you're of Hungarian extraction, so then the Hungarian poskim are very into the nails. Not sure why, not sure pikapal or what. They think that masmer, and it has to be with metal nails. They get very worked up about this. Non-Hungarian poskim don't know where that came from, and assume that as long as it's well attached, it's fine. Sometimes you get mezuzahs that have a sticky back and a double-sided tape. Assuming that it holds well, that's fine. Sometimes it doesn't hold so well. But often that's going to be a modern solution to a marble doorway. Is going to be, instead of grooving into the marble doorway, we'll just use adhesive. The chef took close to the rough, so he thought that using scotch tape is fine too. It's not fancy. It could be removed, in terms of the halakhic definitions, the categories, it's something that's easily removable, but it doesn't come off on its own. So the assumption was, it has to be kavua. You'll remember the very first Gemara we saw in the Hilchos Mezuzah was Daf Lamed Beis, was the Tulah B'Makel, the movable mezuzah pole. So that's no good. It has to be attached. That's the significance of Masmer Masmer. The nails do matter. It needs to be attached, but it doesn't need to be attached with metal, unless you're, again, Hungarian. But it needs to be attached in a way that's permanent, whether it's glue or nails or scotch tape, but something that works. If you're in a vacation home and you want to take mezuzah with you when you're done, and you don't really have the right in your vacation rental to bang holes at all, so a mezuzah wrapped in foil, so it's light, attached with scotch tape is going to be your ideal solution. There is, however, going back to Yitzhar Hirschfeld and his archaeological excavations in Eretz Yisrael. So one solution to have a mezuzah in a stone doorway is groove in. And I told you we'll get that to some significance, some of the historical significance of that. There's another solution to how you put up a mezuzah in a stone doorway. And that goes back to the one we were looking at before. Because you remember what the Gemara say? Rav Nachman was asked what question? What did the Reish Lakish ask Rav Nachman to do? Hang on, mezuzah. So what was his response?
Not yet.
Why? I need doors. So Tosas says that the reason why he needs doors is what? Because until you have doors, you don't know what. You don't know which way. Because you don't know if there's a hacker serious, you're not going to know which way to go. But Tosas points out that Rashi had a different approach. Rashi says, I need the doorways up, because the other way to put up a mezuzah in a stone doorway is it's going to be a little hard to imagine this, because this has been painted over so many times. But you'll use this to conjure up your imagination and think about home, maybe, where you have the wall, and then you have a doorpost. And here, sort of it'll blend into a century of coats of paint have made them indistinguishable. But typically you have your wall, and then you have your doorpost, your door frame. So now, nowadays it's largely decorative. But if you live in a stone house, and you want, forget about the mezuzah, if you live in a stone house, and you want to put up a door, again, if you have a mezuzah, I want a door for my front, I want to be able to keep people out. I want a little privacy. How are you attaching a door to your stone house? How do you attach? How many people here have a garage in the house? Okay, and this is we'll put aside stereotypes. How many people here have tools hanging in their garage? Yeah, leaning. So how many people here have tools leaning against the wall in the garage? Okay, not bad. What do you have? Jacoby, what do you have?
They're like in a box on the floor.
What?
Like tools. Drills.
Oh, wow. Very good. Detroit?
Same. Nails. Maybe hammers.
And what do you have hanging?
Hammers. Saws.
So how do they, so here's the, why is it only you have tools hanging or the rest of you have tools leaning? You probably never thought about it.
There's water on the floor. No? Maybe.
Maybe. Oh, that's why he has them hanging.
He's more organized.
Okay, okay. Why is it hard to hang tools in a garage?
The sheetrocks.
Ah, right, because depending on what your garage is made out of, if it's, let's say, cinder block or sheetrock, it's going to be a little bit easier. If you have cinder block or cement walls, so it, you need some expertise to figure out how am I going to attach anything. If I have, like, plasterboard walls or wooden walls, so you can drill a hole, you can bang in a nail. Well,
that's cement.
I'm not sure. We're not going to find that right now. But there are nails stuck in some places. I don't think there's any special backing. I say if you're dealing with internal walls, it's not too hard to attach stuff to the wall. If you're dealing with a cinder block in the garage, then you need some expertise to figure how you're going to get stuff to hang. That's why it's easier just to lean the tools against the wall, unless you know what you're doing.
We have a board, wooden board.
Very good. So the solution often is you can attach a plank. You'll need a little expertise, but you'll attach a plank to the wall. And then once you have a wooden sheet of wood attached in front of the wall, you could bang in nails and hooks and whatever you want into the piece of wood. That's what you do when you have a stone house. Often, the Tkufas HaChazal, the walls are made out of stone. So up until here, the white, the cream color, imagine your mind, is this stone house. Imagine you live in Beit Sha'an, and the weather is 95 degrees and very humid, and you live in a stone house. So you want to be able to open your doors sometimes, but you also want to be able to close it at night. So you have this big, thick stone wall, and then you're going to install wooden slats like this. You install a door frame, three pieces of wood, and then you attach your door to that door frame. Where does the mezuzah go?
On the door frame.
On the door frame. Right? So Rav Nachman, Rashi says, you know what Rav Nachman was saying to Reish Galusa? Forget about which way the door frame, the door. I need a door frame up. That's what the thing that Tosa debates with Rashi. What was Nachman asking? Nachman says he was asking for the door. The door you need to see which way it swings. Rashi says, no. He was asking for the door frame. What is door frame for? Because that's where the mezuzah is going. Where do you want me to put the mezuzah exactly? What are you asking me to do? He says to Reish Galusa. I mean, this is the original prefab. That's what Rashi points out. You know what Reish Galusa wanted? He brings Nachman to the workshop. And he says, here the carpenter has put together all the door frames, so just attach the mezuzahs now, and then as they put up the door frames, our mezuzahs are good to go. Oh, that sounds. That sounds like, you know, that could be the next Havisha Home Depot item. You get your door frames with pre-attached mezuzahs. Right, that's the ultimate convenience.
Sure.
Does that work?
No.
Let's take a look. Right, so why'd you tell me no?
Because you have to install it on the door.
Oh, and how do you know that's true?
Because he said put the door up.
Oh, no, because that's just, according to Rashi, that's what the Gemara says. Fantastic. Anyone, can anyone think of a Mishnah, a different Masechta, at a different time of the year, that also talks about a case where things sort of happen on their own? Oh! Zlata, I don't know if everyone here knows the story of Zlata and the goat. So what's the story of Zlata and the goat? So the kid gets stuck in the snow. So the snow is starting to come down, and he burrows into a haystack, and he basically stays for a day or two in the haystack with the boy and the goat until the snow finally subsides and they can emerge. So the question is, leaving out the snowstorm. Let's say I want to make a sukkah that way. Leave out the snowstorm and leave out the goat. The goat is optional. The snowstorm would be easier without. In any case, the sukkahs. But imagine that. I already have a haystack. I'm a farmer. It's full. There are haystacks all over my property. So the easiest way to build a sukkah is just borrow out a haystack. It's already pre-made. Just hollow out the middle. Beautiful. You have a big haystack. What's not to like? So the Mishnah says, sorry. It doesn't work. Why doesn't that work? And why doesn't this work? Exactly. Fantastic. Take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. In Siv. Hey. Kevav b'mezuzas ha-Pesach. Again, page 220. Kevav b'mezuzas ha-Pesach ba'oda telusha v'yachak ha-chibur la-Pesach sula. Shulchan Aruch quotes the din from the Gemara. The Gemara has it later also, by the way. This is only, Gemara mentioned more than once in Hilchos Mezuzah. According to Rashi, the first time is here in Lama Gimel. It's actually why Tosa says, if it's about this issue, we should have mentioned it later, when the Gemara says later. Now, however you slice it, it's certainly true. Hi, welcome. Thanks for coming. It's certainly true, however you slice it, that
that this din is correct. You can't attach the mezuzah to the doorpost before the doorpost goes up on the house. Why? And why can't you hollow out the haystack? Suppose the Gemara Rishonim explained for the same reason. It goes by Rosh HaTevis, Tulma. What does Tulma stand for? Ta'aseh. Below, min he'asui. That's actually a medrash. That's a four-word medrash. Ta'aseh is a quote from the Pasuk. Chag Sukkos ta'aseh lecha, shiva asemim. You have to make the sukkah. So the Gemara comments, make, as a below min he'asui. It can't be a ready-made. So in other words, if I have a haystack, when I originally piled the hay for the haystack, the top level that will later become a sock was not originally put on a sock. The measure wasn't even kosher because it was solid. So the sock has to be placed. If the sock becomes sock passively by your hollowing out below, that's no good. That's the lack of ta'aseh. You're not actively making it. And the Gemara says what's true for sukkah is also true for mezuzah. You have to attach the mezuzah. You have to attach that writing to the door. So if you have a door frame lying on its side in a workshop, and you go over and drill a mezuzah onto a door frame, that's not called a CS mezuzah, because at that point you're not attaching to the house. When you later on take it step two and take that pre-equipped door frame and install it in your house. That's min ha'asui, because you're not attaching to this at that point. That's what the post can write, that is a problem. The post can also point out, again, this doesn't come up hopefully that often. But here's a question. How many people here have yet used the bathroom on the first floor, now beautifully redone?
Proudly,
beautiful. Did you notice anything? Did you notice that the walls are very nice and new? Oh, yeah. Gorgeous, right? Do you notice anything that's not new? Right. All the hardware, a lot of the hardware. They redid the vanity for the sinks, but let's say like the stall walls and the whatchamacallit, the paper towel dispenser, like all the other pieces, they are not new. Why they're not new? Because when they did the room, what happened? They took it out, put it on the side, kept it clean, redid the walls, and then reattached whichever pieces of hardware were still usable. So with that in mind, let's say you did that with a doorway. Obviously not a bathroom doorway, because the bathroom doesn't have a mezuzah. But let's say you're doing some other part of your house. And you decide that, look, the door frame is in great shape. It's $200. Why are we throwing out the door frame for? So we'll carefully remove it, redo the walls, redo it in electrical, whatever we're doing, and then we'll reattach the door frame. So they had this door frame for years. It's been maybe it's even sentimental. There's some families where, the grandma has all the kids come every year, and they measure the kids against the door frame, like you see, my grandmother did that. It's like that door frame. I think when they moved out of the house, there were some grandchildren who wanted to take that door frame, like sort of put it in, a family museum. Or something. So, we don't want to get rid of the door frame, but we're redoing other stuff. So we take the door frame out, put it aside, put it in a pod, redo the whatever construction we're doing, and the door frame goes back on. What about mezuzah? So that door frame's been up for years with the mezuzah. You take it down, you put it back up. So that, the Rabbi Akiva Eger quotes, the one Rabbi Akiva Eger on the page, he points out that's an interesting machlokas, early Acharonim, between the Magen Avraham and the Maaseh Sason. Is that called Tasa Lavan Asui or not? Why should that be different?
Because it was Asui.
Right. On the one hand, right now, when you're putting it back on with the mezuzah. But on the other hand, the original attachment of the mezuzah to the doorframe was correct. That was real Asiya. Because the first time you put it on, the doorframe was already there without any markings of the grandchildren. And you put the mezuzah, attach the mezuzah normally to the doorframe. So that's why Rabbi Akiva Eger points out the Magen Avraham is of the opinion that is kosher. I think the standard approach to poskim is like the Magen Avraham. Okay, we're going to stop here for now. We can head down to the Beis Medrash just to give you a sense of common attraction. The next time we pick up with Hilchos Mezuzah, I would like to at least finish this siman. We have one sif left, an important sif. Finish this siman before we break for Pesach. The next time we're going to come back to Yitzhar Hirschfeld again. Again, that picture you had in your mind Maybe for next week I'll try to get, see if I can find the copy in the library, bring it in, that Palestinian architecture in the Roman period. He actually has that. Next time I want to show you, this time just sort of to get you thinking. But he has, there's actually a picture there which has significance for Hilchos Mezuzah beyond what Dr. Hirschfeld realizes, and in a way that is not expressed by any of the classical poskim. A very, 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 very fascinating picture. He doesn't give it away in the caption either. But after we learn the next sif, next time, learn the sugya of the last question in terms of how you put up mezuzah and sif bav, we're going to take a look at a picture of the excavation he did of a home from 2,500 years ago. And it's incredibly intriguing. So we will pick up with that. That will also speak to the question of the use of archaeological evidence in terms of paskin alach shayos. It's a little very, very rich, and it's all mamash. A picture's worth 1,000 words. All I'm going to do is show you the picture after you learn the sugya next time. And you will see, it will get you thinking in interesting ways. Okay, so we head down to Beis Medrash right now, because we're on a slightly modified schedule. What I would love to do is that we're going to pick up with the sugya from last week now. We head down to the main Beis Medrash, our Sunday haunt, not to Klein Hall. We head downstairs to the main Beis Medrash, and we're going to jump back into the sugya of Heseba, particularly part base of the Mount Kamos, in terms of the core issues about, remember we left off last time with Afikoman. Who remembers what we said last time, Afikoman? Or was it said last time after coming? Fantastic, because the Gemara had said. The Gemara had said, thank you. Thank you for positive reinforcement. The Gemara had said what? The Gemara had said four words. Matzah Sarah Haseva. Right? And left vague as to what we mean by matzah. And so we saw the. We had about. Do anyone remember? This is already stretching. Who said which? I remember Ashkenaz Mesfardim, who said which way?
Rambam said lean, but. He also held Pesach.
No, it was
the
other one that you wouldn't think made sense.
Oh,
okay.
Good. So you all both have pieces of it, correct? Rambam was one that the Tosfos, remember Tosfos already said, they said it didn't go Tosfos. Right? Well put. Tosfos already said you do need Heseva. That they said it didn't go Tosfos, be quoted who? Generation after Tosfos. Sure. They also have quoted, you remember, the Talmud around Rutenberg. Yes, you have Heseva, while the Rambam says, no. But we're going to see, as it unfolds, how we're going to go through two different ways of trying to understand what the machlokas is, and this is going to get us to the heart of Heseva. Without further ado, welcome to all the guests who just came in, I'm sorry. If you want to travel us here in the camera, we'll get down to this manish right now, right downstairs. Come.
I think the first quarter of the year,
yes.
Brought up the picture, the same.
Oh, I did?
Robert, yeah.